Good afternoon and welcome to the Sitka Nature Show. This is your host, Matt. I want to thank you for joining me here in the first full weekend of February 2026. We are more than halfway from the winter solstice to the spring equinox, so our days are getting noticeably longer. Sunrises earlier, sunsets later. Hope you're getting out and having a chance to see what's out and about in these longer days. I'd love to hear what you're seeing out there. Please feel free to send me an email, sitkanature@gmail.com, or you can get on my website, sitkanature.org, and leave me a comment there. The conversation I have for this week's show is one I recorded this week with Lauren Bell, Ellen Chenoweth, and Lauren Wild. They are co-organizing an event that is taking place in 2 weeks called the State of the Sound, kind of a science and community event. We'll go ahead and join the conversation with Lauren Bell, sharing a little bit about the idea of this gathering.
The idea behind State of the Sound is to create an annual space for folks who live and work in Sitka, and we're talking about Sitka's lands and waters. So although the three of us are focused on marine research most of the time, we are thinking about all of it, where folks can come together to share kind of observations that they're seeing on the sound, questions that they have, maybe concerns that are coming up, but really just a chance for everyone to talk and for people who are doing research to share their questions, to have interaction with folks. I think that, you know, our community, we all recognize that our community likes to talk and exchange information. And, you know, we're all a really curious, tied to the environment community. And so really having a dedicated space to have these conversations and think about, you know, where priority areas are to continue to ask questions, and maybe even for those of us who do research, seek funding to think about new avenues of research. It's kind of the point of this, but it's also supposed to be a fun a fun gathering. I don't know if you guys want to add to that, but
yeah, I mean, I think it could serve a lot of different purposes. So we're kind of excited to just get as many different people to show up and share and think about how they can plug into this network and learn more and share more and maybe get, you know, educational opportunities going, try to get more of the kind of research that Sitka wants to see funded and going, get more feedback from the community on the research that's already going on. I do research in Sitka Sound, and I'm constantly feel like I'm not up to speed on all the cool things that are going on, all the interesting things people are seeing. And when we were kind of coming up with this, I thought, man, it'd just be nice to get everybody together and just talk about kind of what's going on, what are we seeing, what are we curious about.
And that'll also help for researchers to make sure that we aren't duplicating each other's efforts. And so it's a chance for us to learn what everybody's doing. And then we can, if we're approached about something or if we're interested in something that might fit in with what we're doing or what we're observing, we can, you know, it'll help us learn who else is working on those things.
Yeah, it seems like it's an upgrade from the, oh, I ran into somebody at the grocery store model of, oh, mm-hmm. This thing happened 6 months ago. Oh, that would have been nice to know about. But, you know, it's a small town. It's easy to feel like, oh, well, I run into people so and so. But it gets so busy all the time. And folks that are coming and going, especially I know out-of-town researchers, I spoke with Elizabeth Thomas last summer for one of my shows and had a chance to go out with her husband, Jason, on part of their field work on South Baranof. And yeah, she was excited about coming to town for this event to share a little poster of what they're working on. I think she said that she's working on it, but something similar to what Jason had put together for the Swan Lake stuff that they were doing locally. And I don't know who all might be involved. Those are just some folks that I happen to have interfaced with. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to it myself, just as somebody who is, well, I like to talk. You said, we're a town that likes to talk. I'm like, yes. Yes, we could just put a period there, and that's true. But, yeah, it is really interesting to hear what's going on, and it does seem like there's a lot of opportunities for people to do things that are or find out what other people are doing, because a lot of this is curiosity-driven. And you know, I know, Lauren, you and I have talked in the past about how there can be a little bit of an extractive sort of feeling. Sometimes people are come and they get help. And you know, sometimes we're sending collections off to folks that are going to do stuff. And they're like, oh, we'll let you know. And then it's like years go by. And I know how it goes. Sometimes things, you know, don't end up working out like you hope. And so not everything works. But it does feel a little bit strange, you know, when people come and like you engage with them and you're interested and you're curious and then you just never hear. And so, you know, I know that I the Science Center, my understanding, is trying to work with folks and encourage them to say, hey, you know, this is part of a community here. You know, when you come to the community, we'll welcome you. But also, you're part of the community then, right? And so
totally,
there's some reciprocity there.
I think we're doing a better job of actually setting those expectations from the beginning. Like, yes, we're excited to welcome you to our community, and we expect that you are going to commit to engagement, that you're not just going to come for your field work, that you're going to build in time to be here, to talk with people, to hear the research that's already happened in the same vein, you know, and to hear what's important to the people here. And so having an event where we can point to every year, okay, and this is the spot you can come and have that exchange with folks. And you know, there have been great avenues to do that in the past, the Natural History Seminar Series and things like that, a great place for researchers to present. And there's limitations to that when, you know, it's very much focused on kind of that one-way lecture format with a more limited time for question and answer session afterwards, which always would extend, you know, as long as people could take it, because, again, our community wants to talk to those researchers. So setting up an event that really was focused on that exchange, I think, is exciting. And it's so cool. This first year, you know, I think we set our expectations low for what the response might be for this State of the Sound idea. And we have a ton of researchers from outside Sitka who are coming. And who are excited about this exchange and want to, you know, share what they're interested in and doing. But also, you know, we've emphasized to them it's about listening. It's about listening to the community. And they're like, great, we're so excited about this. So that's been kind of cool to hear.
Oh, yeah. Fun.
I think you touched on another point that is important. You know, like Lauren said, we're a town that loves to talk. We're also a town, like a community that's curious. Where people here are always wanting to learn more and are really aware of our natural environment and are always engaging. And so I think that's another thing that will be really nice to highlight at this event. And it's really for everyone, not just folks that do science or go to science talks or participate in research, but people that are just community members, fishermen, outdoors people, elders, traditional knowledge holders that have been in Sitka for many years and just like to observe and collect data maybe if they want, but mostly just are aware of what's going on and are seeing things and want to share or learn more about those things.
Nice. I'm just kind of curious, do you these days get recognized as somebody who studies whales and have people just sort of randomly asking you about whales?
Yes.
Yeah. I hadn't really thought about that, but it occurred to me that might be one of the...
You can't know. Get through a conversation at the back door with either of Lauren Wild or Ellen Chenoweth without people coming up to
me. We love to see the videos. We love to hear the accounts.
Yeah, often it's like, oh, I saw this weird whale. What kind of whale is it? Or I saw this whale doing this weird thing. That's what this event is about, though.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
People that have this video on their phone of this weird whale thing they saw or a fish that they'd never seen before, or, you know, something in the woods that they didn't understand, you know, was out of place or just was really cool, unusual for this year, or kind of something like that. And bring that on your phone to share and show.
Yeah, it's a different kind of world now when you have phones so ubiquitous that they can actually bring you something. Otherwise, it's this half-remembered story from 6 months
those
before.
Those are fun,
you know?
Too, though.
Yeah,
those,
sure.
I love
there's
those,
a
too.
Lot of, I get a lot of texts of, like, I didn't get a picture of it, but here's what I saw.
Yeah.
And I think when you put those stories together, they can make a lot of sense together. It's just getting them together. So I just, a big moment for me was I got a photograph of a bowhead whale in the Sound a couple years ago. And then putting that out on KCAW, has anybody else seen this? Getting another photo, and then some stories. You know, people had seen something that, yeah, that does sound like what we saw. That does sound like a bowhead whale. And so we were able to bring those accounts together and actually get that, you know, published out there. But, you know, without those people kind of connecting, those stories would just kind of live on in the local lore. And
yeah.
So trying to bring some of that stuff together.
Well, it's interesting because one of the reasons I started this show, which 2012 already, somehow that's a long time ago, but was because I was like, people, I'm just curious what's going on. And the collective sees way more than I see, even if I see more than any other particular individual person, likely because I spend more time out than a lot of folks. But collectively, like, there's always people noticing things, and many of us don't realize that other people are interested. So it's just this kind of story that sits in our head, this experience that we have. And so I'm like, well, I'm interested. Let me know. And, you know, mostly people don't like necessarily email too often. Every once in a while, I'll get an email with a picture or something, but it's on the street. Oh, this bird I saw the other day, you know, I wanted to ask you about it. And they just trust that they'll run into me. It's a small town, you know, so they often do. But it is kind of this funny experience. I'm mostly pigeonholed, pardon the pun, as a bird guy, but you know, I'm generally interested.
You're a super observer.
Yeah, whatever's going on, you know. I don't get out on the boat as often and don't get under the water as often as, well, I guess some of us get under the water, I know. But yeah, it is always interesting to hear what people share. And some of them is just like, I don't know, that's you know, be curious. I'd be interested to know what it was that you saw, because I don't know. And there's a lot of stuff that I see that I'm like, I don't know.
Well, I think a lot of times too, people, like, it takes a lot of knowledge to know what's typical or what's unusual.
Right. Yeah.
And we have a lot of that knowledge in our community, but like a lot of scientists are interested in that. And a lot of regular people are interested, you know, are we seeing these changes, or what's different, or what, you know, maybe was common on a 10-year cycle or something and isn't like a big change. So, yeah.
Well, so, you know, given what we've talked about here, and I guess folks might be familiar with Whale Fest as this long-running sort of symposium that, you know, has a very mix of community and sort of more traditional stand in front, give talks kind of aspects to it. This seems like it's being geared more towards interaction and prioritizing interaction and sort of surface area, I guess, between people. So what sorts of things are in the works? I guess we're 3 weeks away or so, maybe only 2 weeks away, actually, now that I think about it. The year is going by. But yes, a couple of weeks away. And so things are presumably, and I'm sure from your perspectives as organizers, hopefully gelling into what will be the final form. But it is a new thing. So so we can expect some hiccups along the way, I'm sure. But what are some of the plans that are in the works?
Well, I'll say before we kind of describe some of the sessions, it's been a really cool process because we had our 0th annual gathering last February, so about a year ago, where we gathered a lot of folks together. And one of the big questions we asked was, what would you want, you know, a community knowledge sharing event to look like? And what would you certainly not want it to look like? And then we had a planning committee meetings where we kind of kept interrogating those questions. And the big thing that we heard was we do not want lightning talks, and we don't want to just be talked at. We really want to emphasize this exchange, and we want a diversity in format so that, you know, say someone who isn't as comfortable speaking in a group setting might have a different way of interacting, or someone who carries knowledge and represents it through, you know, art or through storytelling has a venue for doing that. So we played with kind of how we could diversify what this looked like over a couple day period. So it is February 19th through the 21st, which is a Thursday night, a Friday night, and an all-day Saturday. And a big thing was accessibility, so it's all free. And it's built so that people can kind of pop in and pop out to the different sessions that they want to be a part of. A fun aspect of it is we are kicking it off on Thursday night with a State of the Sound / Art Change Sicatel's Tales event.
That's Thursday the 19th.
Thursday the 19th. And it's at the Mill Building at the Science Center. Doors open at 6:30. There's going to be food and drink for purchase. But the Tells Tales theme is sounding off encounters and discoveries on Sitka's lands and waters. So it'll be a big storytelling night that should be pretty fun. We've got some excellent speakers that will be sharing some stories. So that's going to kick off our weekend of events. Maybe I'll pass it to you guys for other events.
Yeah, so then, accessibility is big. So everything, we're trying to do it outside of, you know, your 9 to 5. So our next event is going to be on Friday night, and it starts at 6:30. And that's going to be our opening keynote. And the title of it is Sitka Sound, an Eco-Cultural Health View. And that's going to be a co-talk with Mike Miller and Tom Thornton. So kind of looking at, they're just both incredibly knowledgeable people. It just seems like a wonderful way to start off the event. But thinking about kind of the long history of knowledge in Sitka Sound, and then you know, up until the present day. And you know, Mike's been really involved in a lot of management issues and in with Sitka. So, yeah.
And then Saturday morning, so this is February 21st, we will start with a review kind of like an opening, I guess, of what this past year around Sitka Sound has been. So Lauren, Ellen, and I will kind of walk us through some of the big stories that we kind of heard about and are on the forefront of our mind. And then we'll get a couple updates from a few speakers. We have Steve Bethune from Fish and Game, and he's going to talk about an update on the Sitka black-tailed deer population.
The Bucks of Baranoff.
Yeah, his talk is the Bucks of Baranoff.
Nice.
And then Kyle Rosendale and Dean Anderson. So Kyle's with the Sitka Tribe, and Dean is with the Forest Service. They're going to give an update on the readout, subsistence fishery in the Weir, and what's some of the changes that are happening there with co-management. And so that'll be kind of interesting to hear about. I know a lot of people in Sitka use that site for their sockeye. And then, so those will be kind of more, I guess, traditional kind of 10 to 15 minute little presentations where we can have some questions and stuff afterwards and discussion. And then we'll move into a more facilitated roundtable discussion that the rest of that morning, where folks will have opportunities in these smaller groups to talk about their observations, share knowledge, and there'll be note takers at each group to kind of synthesize what all the tables are saying, and all, so that you can hear what else is being talked about as well, and you'll have a way to access that.
And a big part of this too is we've thought, you know, how neat it would be to have kind of an annual report of sorts that comes out of this, and this is, you know, still something we're going to play with as this event grows, but our plan is to take, you know, if we can hear everyone's voice that is participating in this at these roundtable discussions, you know, what people are seeing, what people have questions about, what concerns are coming up, and be able to capture that in you know, a pretty informal, very publicly available report. That's something we can look back on in future years and say, oh, you know, this was a big thing that folks were really focused on in this year. And, you know, as time went on, this became more of a priority area for our community. And, you know, I don't think we see this as like we need to say these are the top priorities that are coming out each year, but more just have a general sense of what people are talking about. So we're pretty excited to have that kind of a record of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting thinking about my own sort of learning journey and the things like what I started 25, almost 30 years ago now is just like hiking and taking pictures of flowers. And I didn't know that would turn me into the obsessive that it did. But, you know, I liked hiking when I was back home in the summers from college, and oh, wildflowers, I'll get some pictures of those. And then I was at school and thinking of home and building a website with my pictures. I was like, oh, I wonder what the name of this is. And that turned out to be a problem. And it was both a challenge. I assumed all the botanists that I was taking classes with botany students at Washington State University, and they were all very polite, but I just didn't really like. They're just plants, right? You got to know the names of them, surely. Field botany is a very different thing than studying like this model organism in the lab somewhere. But eventually I started figuring it out, and I became kind of hooked. But I spent, you know, years that, then the birds came in, and just it's been interesting to see as you kind of have questions answered, essentially, you have new questions. And that's kind of, there's a natural flow, but it's also easy to forget. Oh, you know, I didn't used to know about that. And so having this longer term record of these things that as a community we've been curious about and engaging with, and then, you know, learning about, and then, you know, maybe those kind of fade in our sort of, you know, mind because we take them for granted now. But we didn't always. And so, yeah, it's just kind of as a marker of progress and an opportunity to look back and celebrate a little bit. So are there going to be, like it just occurred to me while you were sharing, so there'll be these roundtable things that folks can do. I guess I imagine you'll have like a sheet with just like a couple of simple questions on it that people could fill out, you know, just like highlight from last year, or, you know, burning questions and whatever else, and that folks, if they just drop in for a little bit or whatever, there'll be opportunities to contribute that way.
Yeah, we're trying to think about the diversity of ways we can get folks input. Yeah, I think some of the questions we will probably be posing there will be, you know, what is your personal conception of the state of the sound, and what are the observations or experiences you've had that kind of feed into your perception of that, and yeah, what questions are coming up for you?
And then, yeah, so to finish off Saturday, after those roundtables, we'll have a lunch break. And then in the afternoon, we'll have these field trips and workshops that will be really fun. So it'll be more get out and do something kind of a thing. It'll be more hands-on. Do you have any examples?
Yeah. Well, we're still getting folks who are proposing workshops, but the Sitka Tribe of Alaska is going to walk people over for a tour of their environmental lab, which is really neat to see and a chance to hear about some of the projects they are spearheading. The Science Center will be taking folks over and giving a behind-the-scenes tour of our wet lab, where we have a big experimental space, and our hatchery and some of the research we have going on. I think those are the ones I'll highlight right now, but we've got a couple other folks who are putting in just skill shares and sharing about different projects, and maybe even getting folks, you know, discussing observations and things that they've seen that would feed into future research.
Yeah, I suppose there's opportunities there also, especially, you know, going forward, if you show up here and be like, you know, I've always wondered about, you know, February obviously limits somewhat, you know, the things that you can do. Yeah. Probably not a great time to learn about berry identification, but, you know, or berry picking. But there are definitely some things that can be done. And there may be things that people are just interested in, curious about that, you know, over time. But
totally.
I appreciate the way that you all have framed this. This is the first annual, and yes, it's going to change, you know.
Yeah, it's really a platform for people to put things on top of, we hope, and engage with, and kind of find a place where people are already coming together to to share or do a workshop, something like that.
And then the very last session of the State of the Sound this year is going to be what we're calling affectionately the Science and Nature Mingle, which is really a kind of a poster information session that is open for browsing. It's going to be 3 to 6 p.m. on that Saturday, the 21st, in Harrigan Centennial Hall. And, you know, again, at this idea that it's really anybody in our community has something to share and expertise to share. So anyone can present at this forum. It's really not meant to be like an academic poster session. It's you know, folks can come and have show and tell items of things that they're doing. I know we have some fishermen who have been working with a researcher to do some oceanographic monitoring, and they're going to bring kind of the instruments they've been taking out on their boats to say, hey, here's what we've been involved in. We will have researchers who are there sharing the work that they're interested in doing or that they're already doing, but we've been very careful to coach those researchers that, again, this is an exchange forum. So, you know, put up your big questions that you want to talk to people about, and have it be a chance to have those conversations. And we'll have local folks that are tabling as well and sharing educational programs and other events. So it's really an open call to folks who want to come and either ask questions or wander through and engage and learn about what's happening and what's on the horizon in our community right now.
Nice. Yeah, I was telling you a little bit before we started recording, it just occurred to me in the last couple of days, I was like, oh, you know, because I don't really think of myself as being a scientist or anything. I don't, that structured data collection stuff is like a, I know you need it for data analysis, and I know enough about the analysis to be like, yeah, okay, it's important, but it's not really what I'm into. I just like to wander around and see what I see. But it did occur to me, you know, there are several of us that are definitely not, you know, professional scientists by any means in town that use iNaturalist a lot, and one Roland Wirth is doing like a little inventory of the island that they have a place on, and so he's really interested in just knowing what lives there, and so he kind of, in a very diligent and kind of consistent fashion, it's not like he tears the whole place apart every year looking for everything, but it's just like consistently making observations of that area, both on the land and on the water around it, and just trying to know what's there. It's a small little island. So that's a project that's like, you know, it's accessible to anybody that's kind of interested to do that sort of thing. I know Paul Norwood is he's got into diving the last couple of years, and he's like trying to find all the things under the water. And turns out there's a lot of all the things under the water, especially if you're willing to look at small stuff. And then he also has really gotten into desmids, which requires a microscope, but they're kind of cool little things that are in fresh water. And muskegs and
bogs. So he could bring a microscope.
It's not the season for desmids. They're a summer season thing. But yeah, we could at least have some pictures. So I was thinking we'd just have a poster of like these kind of iNaturalist projects people are doing.
Totally.
Karen Johnson has been getting mud samples from fishermen's anchors, longliners' anchors, and looking through them for foraminifera. Mm-hmm. Turns out she, on iNaturalist, has more observations and species of foraminifera than anybody else in the world. Mm-hmm. All based on these kind of collections and looking through stuff. So just kind of neat little things that people got interested in and don't have any particular expertise in necessarily other than curiosity and a willingness to kind of dive in and look at these unexplored places. So I just say that by way of encouragement. Yeah, it's a little bit nerdy, some of the stuff that we're doing here, but great. Yeah. You know,
and everyone can be a nerd.
Yeah. We all have our own little nerdy things that we like to do. And yeah, if it involves nature and getting out and exploring and understanding things, then yeah, like love to hear about it.
Yeah. I can share some of the, I have the titles of some of the presentations that have pulled up in front of me. And I am very excited to learn from everyone who's presenting. I was talking to our, the Science Center Aquarium manager about something he's going to present on, which is a big project he's doing trying to propagate sea nettles, which are a type of jellyfish within our aquarium, which is a really hard thing to do. And he's trying to get fishermen to collect him and anyone who's out on the water to collect him sea nettles. So he was talking about putting together a little presentation and maybe even bringing some, if he can, to share. But we have presentations that are going to be talking about long-term monitoring in the intertidal that have been going on for decades here. We have a glimpse into Sitka Sound's deep past, 13,000 years of climate, glacier, volcano, and ecosystem change. We have exploring the underground, studying the functions of fungi in our forests, European green crab in Southeast Alaska. Carrie Lamphere from Southeast Alaska Tribal Ocean Research is going to share about green crab, which have not shown up in Sitka yet, but
yeah, they're on Metlakatla. They showed up in iNaturalist there, yeah.
Yeah, but she's going to share what a green crab looks like so you know what to look for if you're looking for them. We have folks from the Science Center Hatchery who are going to share about the effect of the fall 2025 dry period on Science Center Hatchery salmon, wild berry monitoring and assessment, historical ecology of Pacific herring using ancient DNA. I mean, really, discovering where storm petrels from St. Lazaria spend the winter. It's such a cool, it's going to be a really neat forum for, you know, this cross ecosystem perspective of everything that's kind of going on in Sitka area. So I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, that all sounds awesome. But I'll just add, like, I just put in a little placeholder for some of my students who are doing a project this spring, and it'll be too soon for them to present their project, but I'm trying to encourage them to just do like, when do you think the herring will spawn, you know, just to try to get people engaged in talking about herring spawn timing, because that's something that they're going to be studying for their project. So just trying to engage people and learn from the community kind of at the beginning of their project. So I think just as you were saying, like, there's a lot of different types of presentations that'll be there from scientists with like a ton of information to just people who are curious and say, you know, I think somebody should study this. Let's all talk about, you know, everybody who's interested in having somebody study snails, like, let's get together, you know.
Funny you should say that. There was a guy that came through last fall. I only saw his iNaturalist observations, but he studies slugs and snails, and he, I think, collected a bunch of slugs here, both native and introduced species.
Oh,
and
trying to,
he hit several places throughout Southeast Alaska and into South Central. I kind of wished I'd known he was in town, but he was here for a couple of days and it made it to Goddard at least, because I saw some observations of slugs from down there. But
that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what's cool about this is that, you know, science doesn't happen in a vacuum. And so there might be people that are really interested in a certain thing, but not really aware of what's going on. And ecosystems are so interconnected. And so what I think is really cool about these knowledge shares, like both the roundtable and then this mingle session, is that, you know, people might be able to make connections between observations they had in 2025 and somebody else's observation that might be like linked somehow to it, but they didn't even realize. And it might help us paint a more broad picture of the state of Sitka Sound. So that's kind of what's really exciting about it.
Yeah, it makes sense. I was just speaking. I went birding with a class yesterday. I was invited to go along on a little birding around the neighborhood. And one of the things that it occurred to me to tell them, to talk to them about, is it's like, well, you know, what do birds want? Well, they want food. So different birds eat different food, and they don't want to get caught by other things. They want safety, you know. So all of these things kind of, and different birds mm-hmm. have different requirements for that. But this last year, I said, do you remember what the weather was like last April? These are high school students, so they're like, no, that was ancient history. What are you talking about? But some of us probably remember last, basically after the first week of April until the second week of June, it was gray, mm-hmm. cool, and wet. It was not a great spring. And early summer.
Yeah, I was planning a wedding.
Oh, there you go.
I was doing field work. Not fun.
Yeah. So it was, but, and I don't think the plants, like my apple tree had one apple on it, you know, and so I think like the mountain ash trees and the, you know, there's a number of crab apples, these kind of fruit producing trees that have fruit that persists into the wintertime just didn't last year. Mm-hmm. So like the waxwings that might show up or thrushes and stuff that just have been a little scarce this winter. And you don't really think about that kind of a lag. But yeah, the pollination set in, you know, April and May makes a difference for the next winter about where things are going to show up. Likewise with conifers and finches that like to eat those seeds. And so, yeah, there are these interesting connections of things. Like if you're interested in birds, say, like it makes sense. I know I was able to speak with Marge Ward and Marla Stedeen over a number of years before they passed away. They'd been birding for decades by the time I knew them. And Marge goes, yeah, we always go out and we look for birds. But if there aren't birds there, we just look at what's there. And, you know, just paying attention to the plants and stuff. You don't have to always be looking at birds. And so I think there's a real value in that. And a lot of us kind of get really focused locked sometimes on whatever it is that we're kind of looking at. And so these kind of events are a nice way to you know, use our peripheral vision a little bit and say, oh, wait, yeah, there is something besides, you know, this one little thing that I've been super obsessed with for the last 3 years. But I suppose when you finish your PhD, that's also, it's like you get to do something else for a little while.
Totally.
Yeah. Y'all have had that experience, I guess, of doing the, okay, I can only do this, but once it's done, okay, now I can relax. Yeah.
Yeah, but you got to flex those muscles.
Yeah.
remember what to pay attention to. And yeah, I think that's a great point.
Yeah. Well, so this is happening. I guess we should just remind people we're talking about the state of the sound, which is Sitka, generally speaking, sky, sea, water, land, all the things. And it's an opportunity for folks to come together and just, yeah, have conversation about what you're curious about. And you don't even, yeah, all you have to do is bring your curiosity. You don't have to feel like you know anything. Yep. If you got questions, well, that's just as important as answers. A lot of times it's more important than answers. Yep. So I think it's great to do that. There'll be a little bit of some sort of traditional talks, but the emphasis is going to be more on kind of discussion, small groups, and then this kind of this mingle thing we've been talking about with posters. And yeah, it would be curious to just see somebody with a poster there just has a big giant question on it. What have you seen of this?
There may be that.
Yeah, I bet you'll see something.
We'll
like
have
that.
Some big post-it notes so you can come with it.
Oh,
and
nice. Yeah.
we're going to hopefully have a map up of Sitka Sound, and people can put, what are those called, thumbtacks in where they think it would be nice to have a weather station or a mooring buoy that tells us, you know, current information, wind information, stuff like that. So kind of looking at what we want as a community together, mm-hmm. things like that. So there'll be a lot of interactive stuff and a lot of room for conversation and comments and recording that. Like Lauren said, we want to kind of put together some sort of synthesis where we have this annual document that people can just click on each year that it comes out and look at, you know, what we were talking about in 2026 and 2025.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before you know it, it'll be a long time from now.
I know, it feels funny because we think of all these past years that maybe we weren't collecting this information and synthesizing it this way, but it seems like there's no time like the present.
Yeah, there's the old saying, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, and the next best time is today. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the currents and stuff, and, you know, in my mind, there's like the narrows and stuff where you have the big currents going through, but I don't really think about how much currents are moving through the sound. But the other day I went out with, I went out on the boat. I didn't go diving, but Paul Norwood and my son Connor went diving. And it was a little sloppy out, so we went kind of in place. It was basically on that kind of west edge of Cassiana Islands, kind of northwest a little bit there. And and they just dropped me off on an island, or actually I had to row to the island, and they went diving. And then I kind of was piddling around on the island looking at stuff, and then I got out and was kind of looking on the opposite side of the island from where the boat was, and I go, so those are, I don't remember there being otters when we came by there. And I was like, those are really awkward looking otters. And then I was like, oh, that's Paul and Connor. What are they doing way over there? And it turned out that there had been a big current going through, and they had gotten, they were underwater, of course, got a little bit, they went into this kind of bowl, and I think they're used to diving on in like an island where you just go up and you're getting back to where you go. But in a bowl, you know, you can go out any direction. They ended up going out the wrong direction, so ended up even further away. Connor said that was the worst experience he's had because he couldn't, there was a strong current just going. And I was like, it seemed like a random place. I don't know why there was a bunch of current going through there. There was no like bodies of water that were draining or anything. But, you know, the water's got to move, I guess. And so he got a very direct firsthand experience of what the current can be like when you're in a scuba suit, dry suit with tanks at the surface, just trying to kick through. He said he didn't know if he was going to make it. He was about ready to go bail out and come to the island where I was at and just like sit there. But so there's, you know, currents moving around all the time. I suppose a fisherman probably get that stuff dialed in because there's stuff going on there. But yeah, all the things that, you know, you just don't even know you don't know. And these kind of conversations are a way to kind of open up these questions to things, and or maybe even insights. Like sometimes we have these stories in the back of our head that are like, oh, now that you mentioned that, you know, I saw that, something like that answers that question that I had.
Yeah.
That's why we're hoping we'll kind of bring people together around a whole range of topics because, yeah, you don't always know what you know.
Yeah, it is interesting, those, you know, just stories that come back to your mind when they're sort of sparked by something that you hear from somebody else. I've been curious lately since talking to like the 13,000 year Sitka Sound, kind of they're doing all the things in the lakes and the erratics and all of that. I've had a chance to be over at Inner Point on Cruise Off Island, and turns out there's a bunch of erratic boulders there. And there's, I don't know if you've ever even seen it from the water, there's kind of this big kind of prominence in the middle of the tide flats. That's gray wacky. That's not basalt. So it's this plug of gray wacky that the basalt filled in around. There's actually some great glacial striations on it. So, and we don't know the timing of that basalt. It's like, did that come after the glaciers left or what? Or did it fill up entirely? And those are striations from the prior glaciation. And then the ocean wore down layers and layers of basalt to where it is now. Like, so I'm curious, like, when did this happen? And is it even possible to determine? And it just has opened up this new layer of experience of just wandering around there and noticing these, oh, that's gray wacky, or that's granite. It's not basalt. These rocks don't look the same as the other ones. How did they get here? When did they get here? You know, and these sorts of questions that, you know, when you have a chance to talk and find out what people are doing, you know, just opens up these different dimensions that you can experience when you're out and exploring yourself. Mm-hmm. Do you guys do any, I guess, you know, you all each have your specialties, but I'm kind of curious, like, as you've had a chance to work and have these kinds of conversations with other people, are there things that like you never even considered before that have shifted around how what you're experiencing when you're out and about?
You know, I have a student right now who's doing a marine debris project, and I had never been like, I was like, ugh, marine debris, trash. Like, how am I going to make this interesting? And then I started digging into it and all the ways these different materials are interacting with the environment and the connections of the currents between all these different communities. And it became my favorite project. And now I just think, you know, I'm excited for him to go out on the beach and pick something up and think, you know, look at it and think, how long has it been here? Did it come from this community? Did it come from somewhere out at sea? Where would it have come from? And yeah, just I think once you know a little bit about something, it kind of opens up all your curiosity about that.
Yeah, I started looking at bottles more this last fall and noticing like the caps on them. And there's I found a green cap with like a Pacific Swift on it. Mm-hmm. And I tried to find what that logo, I mean, I figured it was a logo, but I haven't been able to find anything, or, you know, with Asian writing, I don't know, Korean or Japanese or Chinese writing. Those I figure aren't coming from local, but sometimes they have QR codes. And so I tried scanning those. Probably not smart, but but it usually seems like they're just like a scanning code for probably inventory. So they don't actually go anywhere. They're just something like that. But it is kind of this mystery. I know did you ever go to the Paths Across the Pacific, which was a conference here that ran, Nancy Yaw Davis organized that for quite a number of years. Yeah. And one of the staples of that was marine debris. And they had Ebersol, it doesn't sound quite right, but something like that, who studied those, you know, whenever they had a big dump of rubber ducks in the water or something like that, they would ask people to send them because they were studying these marine currents and
there's an online community where you would report different debris that washed up because he was studying how they go around. Yeah, yeah. I found that too when I was researching for my student. Really neat.
And so have you learned anything more about, I mean, so at, when you're out on the beach now, you have a greater appreciation for plastic trash than
not even plastic. Just like I've never been that excited about chemistry, but just learning about how different metals corrode and whether it's exposure to air, what gases in the air are causing corrosion on different types of metals, and then connecting that back to like why certain types of metals are valuable, you know, because they are more stable and more resistant, and why we use different materials on different types of products because of some of those properties.
Interesting.
Yeah.
See, this is exactly why I'm excited for State of the Sound, because listening to Ellen describe the student's project, I mean, now I'm excited to talk to the student at State of the Sound because we're really interested. We have some projects at the Science Center with NOAA in thinking about impacts of marine debris on the environment and by debris type. And so I'm like, oh, I got to talk to the student. how could we learn from what he's seeing? And yeah, really cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's easy to look at things in an undifferentiated way, I guess, without kind of nuance or subtlety. And, it's just a bird or little brown bird is kind of the, fair enough. But, you know, you can't know all the things everywhere. But
so I have a little anecdote about that. When I first started doing sperm whale research, I was going offshore and the lab manager at Jan Straley's whale research lab at UAS at the time was Jen Cedarleaf. She was really into birds. And so when we're taking photos of whales, we usually take a blank photo in between a series of photos to kind of differentiate sightings or groupings or individual surfacings. And so she said, when you take a blank photo, it can't have a whale or anything associated with a whale in it. She asked me to take blank photos of birds. And I had no interest. At the time, I was just like a 22-year-old, like, whatever, okay. And so I would just take a blank of different birds in between the whale shots, never really paid much attention to it, bring them back to the office, and would download them to our server, and Jen would go through and look at them, and she started pointing out all these different pelagic birds that I was seeing offshore on these longline trips I was going on, and it just like got me super into pelagic birds.
I seem to recall you saw a South Polar skua was one of the ones that you got.
Yeah, back then. And you know, I probably wouldn't have cared
at
the time.
That's pretty unusual bird.
And then,
but, yeah.
when she pointed it out, it was like, oh, sweet. And so then I really started paying attention to birds. But anyway, it's just an example of kind of having a little nudge in one direction and then that kind of sparking some curiosity and then thinking about like, well, why were there not very many birds on this trip? And what time of year was it? And what was happening in the environment? Or like, why were there only one species on this, you know? So it's just in different parts, in different areas that we were going on different longline trips, like we were seeing slightly different species and stuff. And when we saw a rare bird, it was exciting. And anyway, so it was just, it got me into pelagic birds, which I never imagined I would be into, but I am.
That's like I told the story earlier. I didn't know that taking pictures of wildflowers would turn into the rest of my life obsession, basically, where I spend most of my time. But that's kind of the way it works sometimes. That shouldn't scare anybody. You know, it's a good thing. But it is kind of wild how that happens. You just get a little bit of, because it is just so easy to just kind of be like, oh, well, that's just trash or it's just birds or whatever, and there's no sort of appreciation for it. But as you just even get a little bit, you're like, oh, I recognize that one now, and you kind of have this connection that forms, and then all the questions start coming that really can, like you were saying, they're just like, oh, I saw these ones but not those ones, and then vice versa the other time, and like, what's going on here?
And I'm also hoping people, you know, people that spend a lot of time on the water will come, like a lot of the fishing fleet, because a lot of those folks are seeing, you know, they're out there all the time, all year. And, you know, people like Karen, who you mentioned earlier, she's cutting open halibut and king's bellies, salmon stomachs, and probably has some really great observations of what, you know, what was different this year about what she was seeing in halibut stomachs or salmon stomachs, and how was that different from years past, and what does she think is going on, or just timing of things. Like, there, you know, I know I've been hearing winter king Winter King trolling this winter has been different than years past, and maybe the timing of where and when they're seeing herring out there are different. And so, yeah, just kind of hearing about those things and bringing them all together to this event and showing up to just sort of comment about what people have seen. It's no small observation or change that people have seen on the water or in the woods is too small to share.
Yeah.
So we're hoping a lot of people will come just pop in and say, yeah, this is happening and it's different than I've ever seen it. And I've been out there for 40 years.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I never thought I would have any idea what king salmon were eating. And it's not like I pay close attention to it, but just seeing Karen's observations go by in iNaturalist, I'm going, well, that's a big mess of pile worms, basically, you know, or the juvenile herring or the or not always juvenile herring or sometimes little flatfish or, you know, it's just like whatever was in the stomach that day. You know, she'll just post a little picture of half digested little little fishes and then people can identify. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's great because it's like it's just so interesting to see.
Well, and those are an important species. You know, the king salmon are important species here for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
And so what they're eating then, by extension, is also important, and just trying to understand that. And yeah, most of us don't have the opportunity, but yeah, the curiosity is, at least for me, is still there. So
yeah,
it's a nice opportunity to see that. And yeah, who knows what else other people are doing out there or what you could be doing. I mean, that's the other thing of it is there are a lot of avenues, and it sounds like there may be some opportunities for folks to, well, just share there directly, but also learn about places that they can share. We've been talking about iNaturalist a little bit. Yeah. I know that there's something called Skipper Science, which seems to be geared towards fishermen, or maybe not just fishermen, but people out on the water, boat captains.
Yeah, anybody that's out on the water. But yeah, Skipper Science is a good one. Hopefully they'll have a presence at the event too.
Yeah. Another recent story I'll highlight that we'll have some presentation about at State of the Sound that I think is a good example of, you know, hearing about something that's happening and trying to place it within, you know, the what people have observed over time. You know, is this a new thing? Is this something that's happened before? Is in our partnership with Sitka Tribe, we started to hear that there were quite a few reports coming in from abalone harvesters over the last year about abalone with really weak shells that were breaking under people's hands as they were trying to remove them from rocks. And really, you know, on close investigation, very, very thin shells. And we've been working with the tribe and with partners at UC Santa Cruz to get a kind of a preliminary sense of how prevalent this might be. In Sitka Sound, and what, you know, what possibly is causing this? You know, is it really an abnormal thing, or is it just kind of, you know, something that people saw in a couple areas? And so far, it's been interesting. It's there's some thoughts that it might be affiliated with a burrowing worm that is
like a little,
found.
Abalone puttick or something?
It's a Polydora worm that is being seen. But the challenge there is that it's those worms are present in shells that are thin and shells that are more robust. So is something happening that, you know, is triggering those worms to go a little crazier in their burrowing in certain areas versus others? And has this worm always been in Sitka Sound? It is in other areas associated with mariculture operations that you'll get big influxes of these worms. So there's just so many questions at this stage. We're at the very, very beginning of trying to figure out what's happening here and is it new? But again, what a great time to share that this is something people are seeing. You know, this group is looking for funding to kind of continue to see how prevalent this is, but really trying to get as much input as we can from folks who harvest abalone of, is this something you've noticed before? Have you had abalone that have crushed under your hands in years past, or is this totally new? Feel like I've talked to a lot of people who are like, oh, I guess I should go back and look at all the shells I've collected over the years and see if I can see, you know, any evidence of this. But yeah, a really,
well,
really
it
interesting one.
Speaks to me a little bit of the perpetual challenge of baseline.
Yes.
You know, what is our baseline? And obviously it's always harder to go back in time and try and figure out proxies or maybe if you're lucky, some direct evidence and data. But it's so valuable when something changes. It's like, oh, is this a new thing or not? And the you know, the challenge, of course, is you can't measure everything all the time, and you never know what is going to be significant later. So it's finding this balance of doing the best that you can. But these sorts of conversations that we have and people starting to make records, because I have definitely had conversations with folks that are like, I've never seen it this way before. And I say, I don't know what to tell you, but it has been this way before because I wrote about it 10 years ago, you know, and I kept track of that. Because there's this tension between our memories being fallible and sort of the way that they land on us in a particular time, you know, depends on what we got going on. And so so having this, trying to integrate all of this in a way that is sensible and allows us to make decisions and say, hey, is this an effect of a particular point shift in conditions, you know, something changed in how humans are doing something, and so now there's a change, or there was a current shift, or mm-hmm. you know, some other event, or is this part of the natural variability? But the more that you can just kind of keep track of this over time, and that's why, you know, having these records that you're looking to compile out of these conversations and you know, the sorts of questions, because then you can look back and say, well, you know, somebody said, and maybe it's every 20 years, you know, there's an outbreak of this sort of thing. And 20 years from now, none of us really remember, but it's easy enough to go for a search and go, oh, look, yeah, we did talk about this before. It happened, and then we never saw it again for a while. Totally. Now it's back again. That gives you a different sense of context for what's happening than we might have without that. And, you know, like everything, it's like it would have been nice if we'd started 40 years ago, but, you know, we have now, and maybe 40 years from now, those that come after us will be, we might still be around, I guess, but we'll be pretty old by then.
Well, maybe, I mean, I'm hoping that State of the Sound will kind of inspire people to be careful observers of their environment and to kind of engage more mindfully with what they do observe. And hopefully that'll lead these conversations to be richer and richer in the future, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, seems like something to look forward to. Well, we are getting close to the end, and since we have three of us here, I'd happy to hear any sort of thoughts that you might have, or if you have a story that you want to share just from some of your highlights from the year. Maybe we could end with that. I think we have enough time for that.
Sure. Well, I think what I would just emphasize, and Ellen and I were talking about this on the way in, is, you know, the impetus for this event and this knowledge sharing was not that we have an overarching concern about the health of the state of the sound the state of the sound currently. I think it's really more of a celebration of everything that's happening in the sound now. And sure, things change, and we know that there's environmental change that's causing things to shift. This event is really not meant to be a space where we're all throwing in our concerns about what is happening. I think it's going to be a nice space to raise those questions that people have about what shifts are going on. But it is also really meant to celebrate, you know, what a curious community we have and how many resources are going into trying to ask questions and find answers to some of this stuff. So that's the part I'm really excited about in this event.
Nice.
Yeah, and I think we feel really lucky to live here. There's so many cool things about our environment here and so much worth paying attention to and enjoying and working to protect. So, yeah, I'm just excited to learn more about things that I haven't even been paying close attention to and learn from people who are paying close attention and kind of open my eyes a little bit more.
I mean, Lauren and Ellen really put it pretty well. I don't have much to add in terms of what I'm looking forward to with this event. I'm just really excited to hear people talk about things they've seen and learn, because that's kind of why we all started talking about doing this, was like, what else is happening? What are people seeing? What are the new things? I think personally, my, you know, things that I've seen in the last year have to do with, you know, we have these increasing numbers of gray whales that have been coming in the past few years that we've spoken about before. We have humpbacks doing different things, and it seems like during the herring season there was fewer of them this year than in years past. But they're certainly sticking around in the fall and winter like they usually do, and so we're just noticing things about like that. I'm really curious in learning more about people's observations with herring and where those, because there's that connection between whales and herring and what they've been doing and movement and age classes and all that. So those are, and then, you know, last fall there was those tuna that were coming in, and I would love to hear folks' observations and stories about those. because people were really excited about going out and catching tuna, and what does that say about the warm, the surface temperatures in the ocean offshore. And so, yeah, those are some of the big ones. And I'm excited for Steve's talk about the deer, because, you know, my family hunts and we eat venison. And so knowing about those things and the sockeye stuff, because we fish and we collect, we put sockeye away for the winter. So all those things, I think, are really locally relevant. And I'm excited to kind of listen to what people have to say.
Nice. Yeah, the you're talking about the humpback whales made me, I had never really used happy whale before, but this last year I put a couple of observations into happy whale. And now I'm getting emails like, your whale was spotted in Hawaii. And I was like, oh, oh, nice. I guess it's down in Hawaii right now.
Still alive.
Not my whale specifically, but the one that
whale
I
you saw, yeah,
the whale I had seen. So, yeah, it was kind of the first one I ever put in. I was like, I thought you were supposed to get a notification on these right away, and I just like never heard anything. And 6 weeks later, it's like, your whale has been identified. And it turned out that I think I might have been the first one that uploaded a picture of that whale.
Oh, cool.
And then finally, a second one came in, and then they started they gave it a number or whatever, and then yeah, that one, and then some other we saw it. I saw it up in Krestoff Sound in the earlier in the fall, and then on the Whale Fest cruise that year. This would have been two falls ago. It was there by Middle Island when we were out on the Whale Fest cruise. So
oh, cool.
It was. I didn't recognize it at the time. I'm not so like dialed into the fluke patterns that I'm just like. But
I think the Happy Whale tagline is "Know your whales individually."
Yeah, it's kind of a cool thing. It is. I mean, we did a banded bird study where we had individually banded birds, and it's a different feeling when you're like, oh. You're the same bird. Yeah. You're not just generic Junco. Yeah. You're like the Junco that was here. And there's actually a Junco from that study that showed up again last fall on Galenkin Island. It was banded in 2016. So
10
it's
years.
10 years. That's getting to be an age record for Juncos.
That's
it's
cool.
Pretty close to age record for dark-eyed Juncos. I mean, you don't really know how old they live because mostly those are based on recaptures. Yeah. But yeah, it's pretty neat. So the individual thing is kind of cool when you can do it. And this last year at Whale Fest on the cruise, there was definitely somebody on the boat that was like really into it. It was like, I recognize that whale and that whale.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that might've been Bree.
Yeah, yeah. There's some folks that seem to get into it that way. So
yeah,
that's not my thing quite as much because I'm not out on the water, but I bet if I were, I'd probably get into it because I'm a little weird that way. But
well, maybe the last thing I'll say too that we're looking forward to for State of the Sound is getting to the end and hearing from people what they liked and what they want to see different. And
yeah,
I think that's
feedback.
Yeah, that's the fun part of this being an iterative and hopefully annual event is we're going to see how it goes and then we can shift it and make it fit what the community wants.
We'll have another 12 months to incorporate feedback.
Yeah,
so. We've tried to get as much feedback as we can in organizing it, but I think until you really put something out there, give people a chance to react to it. So we're ready for that.
Plenty of folks that'll show up when it isn't quite exactly how they wanted it, and we'll let you know, and then you can iterate and improve. And so just to remind folks, I don't know, Lauren, if you want to just like give the brief rundown of the timing of this all.
Sure, yeah. So State of the Sound, community knowledge sharing event that'll be new, mostly at Harrigan Centennial Hall, February 19th through the 21st. It's evenings of 19th and 20th are Thursday and Friday, and then all day February 21st, and it's free.
And you can pop in and out.
Come on by.
So just come by the Centennial Building. You don't have to show up at 9. You can come in whenever.
Yep. So I imagine it'll be on the community calendar for Raven
Radio.
We're
about to make our big push of all the information show. There's
a
website.
And the Sound Science Center hosts the website for 2026 State of the Sound.
Yep.
All right. Well, great. That sounds good. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a conversation I recorded this week with Lauren Bell, Ellen Chenoweth, and Lauren Wild, the co-organizers of the State of the Sound gathering that is coming up in 2 weeks. I'm looking forward to being there, and hopefully we'll see some of you there. I want to thank Lauren, Ellen, and Lauren again for taking some time out of their schedules to visit with me, and thank you for joining me here on the Sitka Nature Show this week. As always, I'd love to hear what you're seeing out there. Please feel free to send me an email, sitkanature@gmail.com, or you can get on the web, sitkanature.org, and leave me a comment on my website. Until next time, this has been Matt on the Sitka Nature Show, KCAW, Sitka.